Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Now the Rocky Mountain News is gone in Denver. On Tuesday, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer axed its print edition and let go most of its staff after 140 years on the watch. One after another, American newspapers are going down, fighting for their lives, some losing. Who will do the work they've done? My guest today, Stephen Johnson, says just wait and see, that our news environment may end up better. That's this hour On Point, a new news ecosystem. You can join the conversation if your newspaper goes. How will you get your news? Will a new ecosystem thick with bloggers fill the breach? Could it be better? In a few minutes, we'll hear from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, which has gone smaller and online only this week. And later, we'll hear from New York Times media maven David Carr. Joining me first from New York, just recently out of Austin, Texas, is Stephen Johnson. He's a tech entrepreneur and best-selling author, a web pioneer who started the online magazine Feed back in 1995 and the community site Plastic.com in 2001. His latest book is The Invention of Air, a story of science, faith, revolution, the birth of America. His latest venture is the hyper-local news site Outside.in. In Austin on Friday at the big South by Southwest Interactive Festival, his speech, Old Growth Media and the Future of News, got a lot of attention. Stephen Johnson, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be here.
Everybody sees newspapers teetering, tottering, some falling. What's the case you're making?
Well, the case is, first off, that obviously we're going through an incredibly difficult and ugly time. In a sense, what's happened, the tragedy of this moment is that what should have been really a kind of a 10-year evolution as the new forms of news evolved and diversified and maybe we transferred from print to digital, because of the economic crisis, that 10-year process has been crammed down into a year or two. And in some ways, the audience isn't ready. The online advertisers aren't ready. A lot of the things that need time to kind of evolve just, aren't in place yet. And so It's. I don't want to be cavalier about it. It is ugly, and people are going to lose their jobs, and cities are going to lose papers at least for a while. And there's nothing good about that in the short run. But what I wanted to try and do in this speech and essay is to give people a little bit of kind of a long term view about where I think we're headed. And
let's hear that, because a lot of people I think have an image of a world without newspapers, a country, towns without newspapers, and it's sort of a Blade Runner bleak. There's no news commons anymore. There's nobody digging up the information on what's going on at City Hall or Capitol Hill. Everybody's isolated off in their own little pod, and we retreat to our caves and growl at one another. You've got a different picture. Good.
Yeah, that's right. Well, because I think the way to make sense of the future is to look to the past in two ways. What we're moving towards is, as you mentioned already, more of a kind of an ecosystem model of news, right? It's not a big assembly line mass media model. It's a model where there are lots of small players. There are fewer kind of big institutions. There's lots of information kind of flowing through the system and being recycled and repackaged and commented on. It's a much more distributed system than what we've been used to for the last 100 or 200 years.
Is it just a jungle?
It is a little bit like a jungle, but a jungle kind of in a good way, in the sense that there's actually more information, there's more intelligence, it's timelier, and there's more commentary, there are more perspectives offered. And so to understand that, I think the place to look to kind of get a sense of the future is the parts of the web where that jungle, in a sense, has had the longest time to evolve. That's what I'm calling in the speech the old growth media, right? Mm-hmm. And the first place is technology news, right? So the web has been covering technology because people who first got on the web were interested in technology. The web has been covering technology for kind of the longest period of time.
And you remind us, you take us all the way back to 1987 there. You were maybe in college. You were in Providence, Rhode Island, and you would wait at the bookstore for your favorite magazine to show up in perfect ignorance until it did.
Yeah, this is a very nerdy, embarrassing story, but when I was 19 in college, I would wait outside in the third week of every month at this bookstore and kind of go in four or five times a day waiting for Macworld magazine because I was interested in the Mac and in Apple. And basically that was the only way I could get information about what was happening in, you know, this very important big company and all the kind of services and software that was coming out around that company. You know, if there was a big announcement or Steve Jobs got fired, it would be in the New York Times. But other than that, I had to wait for this one magazine.
Until that chunk of pulp showed up, you were there in the dark.
Exactly. And all the news would be a month and a half old, you know, but that was the only thing I could get. And now, fast forward to where we are today, and not only is every, you know, big keynote speech by Steve Jobs or whoever, you know, live blogged, so I get the news within, you know, 10 seconds of what they've said, but there are these 8,000-word dissections of each new operating system written by this wonderful technology site called Ars Technica. Mm-hmm. And there are these wonderful commentators about every little thing, every shift in kind of the business model and changes in the interfaces. I mean, there is far, far more and more complex and more nuanced coverage of the technology world than there was before the web came along.
Okay, but you have in this speech and just now proved yourself a nerd. who was willing to stand
guilty as charged?
Right. I mean, all power, all hail the nerds. But you were willing to wait for Macworld. You know the online world of tech news inside and out. You're prepared to wade in there and figure it all out. Start to move this over to the much wider population that historically interact with newspapers. What options do you see them having online ultimately, and how do they access them in the way that's not just overwhelming and confusing and atomizing?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So I think and by the way, I think everything I said about technology news is also true, as I talk about in the speech, of politics. You look at political coverage, which is also an old growth forest. Mm-hmm. The amount of information we had on the 2008 campaign was just extraordinary compared to, say, the 92 campaign, which is the first one that I really followed compulsively.
Extraordinary. And you say better, not just in volume, but you say in quality as well. Some people argue with that, but we'll take your point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is, you know, if you go look at something like 538.com, which did incredible statistical analysis of the polls. You look at the state-by-state race coverage that you get on a site like Daily Kos and some of the great muckraking journalism that Talking Points Memo is doing, in addition to the great newspaper coverage that's there, obviously traditional media coverage and public radio coverage, I should say. So the whole range of kind of options that you had, there was just far more information that we had at our disposal for that election. So your question is a really important one. Where, for someone who doesn't, you know, have the time or maybe the skills to kind of seek out all these different sources, how are they going to benefit from this? And I think that is precisely the role that the newspaper is going to play, probably online more than in print. But they are going to be the trusted guide to this jungle. They're going to be reaching out and looking at all the things that are happening out there on the web, the interesting local bloggers, the interesting political bloggers, the great tech coverage that's coming from all these different sources. And they'll pick out the stuff that is most important and promote it and run it on their sites and maybe kind of share their advertising networks with those local bloggers who aren't on their payroll, who aren't part of their, you know, kind of editorial staffs. And because we believe in these newspapers, because they have trusted brands and a reputation for excellence, they can be the kind of the guide through this exploding new ecosystem.
I have a million questions about that. You no doubt saw Nick Kristof writing the New York Times op-ed page today, God save us if we're all out there finding our own stuff on the web. But do you really believe that the distillation of, I don't know, 1,000 blogs is equal to the reported news of 100 reporters?
It really depends on what you're talking about. I mean, I think that the papers should still be able to have trained reporters on staff. They may not have, you know, trained reporters. No, they will have paychecks. The reporters that they do. I mean, Jeff Jarvis, the media critic, has a great line that papers should do what they do best and link to the rest. Right?
There's a lot of unemployed reporters right now who are going to wonder what paychecks you're talking about, I think.
Yeah, but there's still – I mean, you know, in 2008, the newspaper business was still, on a whole, profitable. And the other key thing here is that there is 10 – you know, the kind of consensus estimates are that there's $10 billion in local advertising that has not yet gone online, that's going to go online in the next 3 or 4 years, that there are all these local merchants out there that are ready or starting to think about advertising online. And when they do, the online news sites that don't yet have the kind of mature advertising markets – that they need to, you know, support these reporters are going to be the people, I think, who benefit the most from that shift in advertising. So I think this is, again, this problem of, like, this is happening too fast. We need that advertising market to mature for these papers to be able to kind of build up their, you know, kind of enough profitability that they can support the things that we've always valued in them. But that's why I think what the PI is doing in Seattle, you know, is both, you know, tragic and smart. That news that, you know, kind of the news staff is getting downsized dramatically. But over time, they'll be able to build it up as the market matures, as their online audience grows, and as they figure out kind of new models in this new system.
Lots of questions here to figure out. I mean, I guess who can deny more and more information sources, news sources crop up? Then you're describing newspaper editors as becoming sort of guides or aggregators of blogs, but yet you think they're still going to have reporters and, by your estimate, on the other side of all this, heaven help us, it may even be better. We may look back on this time as a news desert.
Well, you know, I think in some ways what one of the reasons why I feel this way is that, you know, as you mentioned, I just wrote this book, The Invention of Air, which is all about kind of the founding fathers and Joseph Priestley, the scientist and political writer and theologian. And this is all, you know, kind of Enlightenment Britain and America, kind of late 1700s. Mm. And it looked a lot more than the kind of the ecosystem of ideas and innovation and news looked a lot more than, like, I think it's going to look in 10 or 20 years here. There weren't these big institutions. There were a lot of the kind of the equivalent of bloggers at that point, people publishing their own pamphlets. A lot of information flowed through kind of private correspondence. And they did really well during that period. It was a tremendously rich and innovative period with lots of great ideas circulating. And if we get closer to that as a model, that's not so bad.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about newspapers in more trouble and whether a forest of bloggers, a new news ecosystem, will do the job that newspapers have done. Stephen Johnson is with us from New York today. Web pioneer, best-selling author, most recently of The Invention of Air. He was in Austin last week for the big interactive festival that now accompanies the music hoedown there. Gave a speech that has a lot of people thinking and talking about whether a new news ecosystem may be emerging. Headlines on newspapers, bad. Seattle Post-Intelligencer putting out its last printed edition earlier this week, cutting its staff way down. And you want to go on and see the rest of the news? It's all over the Rocky Mountain News. Dead. Detroit Free Press has cut home delivery to 3 days a week. Star Tribune in Minneapolis, Inquirer and Daily News in Philadelphia, bankruptcy. USA Today says at least one city, maybe San Francisco or Miami, Minneapolis or Cleveland, likely will soon lose its last daily newspaper. Seattle, of course, has more to fall back on. Other cities may not. We want to go right to Seattle, where the Post-Intelligencer has gone down this week. Monica Guzman joins us. She still has a job there. She covers the culture of technology for SeattlePI.com. She was the first online reporter for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. She's now one of about 20 staff members left after 150 were let go in the PI's transition from print to web on Tuesday. Monica, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Stephen Johnson says, not exactly don't worry, be happy, but that eventually it could end up even better online. Does it feel that way right now with the PI on the web for you?
You know, it's definitely difficult because this week has been, I mean, the past 2 months have been so emotional, so rocky, so many people have lost their jobs. But if anything, that's putting more of a pressure and kind of, it's driving, I think, those of us who are left on this new venture on SeattlePI.com to work that much harder because we recognize that there's an incredible opportunity here to build a new model, to start something fresh. And the idea being that if we can build it up, maybe in a couple of years, we can call some of them back and say, you know, come back. We can bring you back now, and let's start fresh, and instead of cutting back, let's grow.
So the printing press is cold, silent, not running. You had a news staff of 165. Now you've got 20. What do you do with 20? With 20, you've got the web. You can write. You can publish. But what do you do with 20 compared to what you did with 165?
Right. Well, you know, all of this is something we're all figuring out as we go, and that's that's actually one of the biggest differences with, you know, how it was before with a lot of established conventions. Now we're kind of experimenting. We're changing things day to day. We've only been around a couple of days, but I can tell you that yesterday we all were producing a lot, and we were writing more stories than we have before. And we're also taking a different look at what we do in the organization. None of us are going to be simply one thing. We're not going to be just reporters or just editors or just photographers. In fact, the idea is that in several months, we'll be able to train each other to be a little bit of everything. So that's kind of the plan. Even our web producers will be writing.
But Stephen is saying that in part what newspapers will do, may do, is to be guides to what others bring to the web, bloggers. Is that part of your vision? Are you doing it now? Or are you sort of, editing, providing new sense, pulling together blogs or not?
Yes, we are. Actually, we've very recently started to link on our homepage straight to neighborhood blogs, niche blogs. Whoever in Seattle is doing good work, doing good journalism, and giving out good information. Steve, in his speech, quoted Jeff Jarvis, who said that you should do what you do best and link to the rest. And I think that in the ecosystem model, which I agree is probably the best way to look at what's happening, that is a good strategy. So already we're doing that, and it's breaking with conventions at a lot of newspapers.
How do you know which bloggers are good and which ones are full of beans? In the old system, if a reporter, you know, fouled up too many times, they'd be fired. But what about bloggers?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And that's also something we're figuring out. But in Seattle, at least, because we're so tech-savvy, because we're so literate, there have been so many bloggers doing this already for several years. And the fascinating thing, kind of watching them grow, is how they learn from each other, get inspired from each other. One of them started to get police reports from her neighborhood in West Seattle. And before long, all the neighborhood bloggers started doing the same thing, getting police reports from their neck of the woods. And they start to kind of imitate each other, copy each other, do better work. Their commenters tell them, hey, you know, you didn't cover this part of the story. What's going on? Next time they do that part of, you know, a similar story, they will cover that part of the story. So I think Steve is right when he says that it may be premature to judge a lot of blogs for what they are right now and to think of them instead as evolving products, because in Seattle already we're seeing a lot of growth and some really impressive quality. Mm. So, you know, do we know? Well, no, but that's because in an ecosystem model, trust is no longer assumed. It's earned. Mm-hmm. And we are used to this system where, you know, if you work for a newspaper, you're automatically someone with a stamp of approval and a stamp of trust. But we're moving into a new kind of ecosystem, and it is very different. And I think as readers also, we're going to have to learn how to navigate that.
It's desperate. It's promising. You're brave. Monica, stand by. I want to get Stephen Johnson's two cents on what you all are up there now. But let me get a couple of callers on here first, if I may. Let's go first to Punta Gorda, Florida, and Elliot. Elliot, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Well, what do you think, Elliot?
I personally think that with newspapers declining in business, it's just kind of a sign of the times. It's the 21st century. Technology is more prevalent in everyone's daily life more than ever. Most major papers already have their publications online for easy access, and if anything, they're more expensive than what's being delivered to your door. I understand that's going to have some job issues. People are probably going to end up losing their jobs. But, I mean, that's just kind of what happens when technology becomes outdated. It's eventually going to die out. I can understand having, a press still be at, your gas station or, a newsstand, still having those out. But as far as daily publications go, I think those are just an outdated sign.
So they're going, and it's okay with you. Elliot, we've got it. Let's get one from Columbia, South Carolina. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty well. What do you see, Eric?
Well, I have worked for newspapers for about 15 years, and I've known since maybe around 2000, well, for a while. I don't want to say which year, but I've known for a while that the printed newspaper is a dying breed. It is going the way of the dinosaur. However, I was talking to a friend of mine a couple of nights ago, and we were discussing that maybe a way that newspapers could stay in business, a printed newspaper, is instead of relying on wire reports, which I noticed the last newspaper I worked for the national and world news were all wire reports that you could pull offline.
Right,
pull
AP,
online.
Reuters from all over the world, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Instead of that, I mean, there are countless local stories that are never covered in a newspaper. So she lives in Los Angeles, and she and I both agreed that if newspapers covered local issues, that maybe the printed newspaper might survive.
Maybe. We'll pick that one up as well, Erica. Let me get one more call here. Eben in Vergennes, Vermont. Eben, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I definitely look at the blogger as the new way of doing business. I think that what your former caller was just saying is that the pulling things off sort of a standard line that everyone's pulling from, I find that the blogosphere world are people that are very passionate about certain causes that many times the media, I believe, is too afraid to cover. One example is Allison Weir in Northern California, who is tackling the discrepancy not only with what's being left out of our media about Israeli and Palestinian conflict, but also how the media is distorting it. And that's where I feel the blog has the greatest opportunity, because they're not beholden to advertising, and they're really exploring the world well beyond what the media has been doing.
The blogs may be braver. Eben, we've got that point as well. Let me take it. Stephen Johnson, I'm going to have you talk with Monica for a second here, but take on our listeners first. You know, we've got Punta Gorda saying papers are gone, that's okay. You hear South Carolina saying go local and you can stay in print. I wonder if you believe that. And finally, you know, from Vergennes, Vermont, bloggers may be braver. Really?
Well, let me take the local bit, because that's very close to home, because that's what really we're working on at Outside.in. I think that is local is clearly the space where we are going to look back in 10 years and realize that, in fact, newspapers did a good job with local, but in fact, it's been vastly improved because of the reason the caller is talking about. When you think about what really matters to you in your community, the truth is a big fight at the school board meeting at your kid's school is bigger news than, you know, a police corruption trial somewhere across town. But traditional papers have never been able to cover that school board fight unless it breaks into some giant story, because they just don't have the even in their heyday, they didn't have the feet on the ground to go and kind of cover all those things. But a local blogger does have that ability. If they're a parent at that school, they are the true expert in that situation. And that's what bloggers are starting to do.
Okay, but let me ask, all the way down at that level, maybe I can see it, but let's say, I mean, I used to cover City Hall. Because I represented a newspaper with some institutional clout, I was right in there. I could go into the offices of the city councilors. They felt they had to speak to me, or usually did. You know, can a blogger get that access? Will they be afforded the respect that the press, represented by buildings and brick and mortar, did?
Yeah, but I think what will happen is that the newspaper will continue to have, you know, three or four, you know, big city kind of reporters who will cover City Hall. Mm-hmm. And then they'll have, in a sense, an army of, you know, virtual stringers who will be covering neighborhood by neighborhood and block by block. And you'll be able to go in. This is what we do at Outside In. We organize all that content geographically. So you can say, I live on this street at this address. You know, what has anybody said about crime within 1,000 feet of my house? And you can get that kind of targeted information already. I mean, this is already coming. This is already available, what we do, and coming from the local bloggers and communities all around this country. And that those sources are going to get richer and richer and more kind of comprehensive. But we should still be able to support, you know, three or four, you know, city reporters, you know, in each big city who will go and do the things that you're talking about that you used to do.
Three or four reporters. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer has let go of almost 150.
But they still have 20, and as Monica's saying, they plan to grow. What I love about – you can hear it in Monica's voice. I mean, she's obviously been through an incredibly harrowing experience, but she's in an internet startup now.
Yeah, she is.
You know, she's went from this business on life support to suddenly, you know, the whole future is in her hands, in her colleagues' hands. They're getting to invent a whole new model here, and that's what I think is so bold and you know, promising despite the layoffs of what they've decided to do with that experiment.
We're talking about a new news ecosystem. Monica Guzman is right in that new ecosystem, part of the little team left in Seattle at the Post Intelligencer are trying to build it at seattlepi.com. Now, Stephen Johnson, take 2 seconds, give a quick consult here. What's your question or your advice to Monica as they set out on this new kind of startup phase of the Second Life?
You know, there's a slogan from the kind of open source software movement, which in some ways is relevant to what we're talking about, of release early and release often.
Meaning?
Which is the idea that you build a new kind of tool and you think it's kind of interesting, but you're not sure if it's totally ready yet, but you throw it out there earlier than you might have in a traditional software company, and you get feedback on it, and you improve it, and you tinker it, and then you put out another version, and you iterate again and again and again. And I think that's a great model for this stage, particularly at the PI, of trying to figure out what it should be. It's like, let's just do a lot of experiments, throw them out there, see what the audience thinks, get them involved in the process, get them contributing to it, and you know, enjoy this period of experimentation.
Monica, what are you letting go of? What are you not doing here? Where do you first feel most promising about what you can, will do online?
Well, I think Stephen is right in that we are behaving somewhat like a startup, and that's kind of the idea. And already I was kind of shocked at a meeting we had yesterday, a very quick meeting of the staff. Since we're just getting started, everything's still kind of, you know, just settling in. And we decided to make a couple of kind of changes in certain approaches that it just felt that in the kind of newspaper that we were in would have taken so long, and we made that decision in seconds. And I thought, oh, my gosh, so this is the new way. We're going to be able to, like Stephen said, you know, get feedback from people, put our product out there, improve it more quickly, and that's a good way to learn. And so the most exciting thing to me is knowing that there is such a good potential for learning and for improving organically and for bringing readers into that process. And I think that I don't think that can go wrong, and that has me really excited.
Monica Guzman, you're brave and good, and we wish you luck at SeattlePI.com. The paper may be gone, the presses may be quiet, but you're still out there with your big blog, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
We'll talk again. Thanks very much for being with us. Let's get a call from Buffalo, New York. Rita, you're on the air.
Yes, I guess maybe I'm an old-fashioned person. Of course, like in the old newspaper, I've lived in Seattle and Minneapolis and also Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and read all those newspapers. They were good, but I live in Buffalo, New York now, and there's nothing better than the Buffalo News. And I think that people, the local news is the best on the small newspaper. And I just hope that it doesn't see its last day.
Are you willing and ready to go online and get it if the paper on the doorstep goes away? I'm not saying it's going, but if
so.
It did.
I mean, I look online. I send people, you know, I'll see an article in my paper, and I'll go online and get it. Send it to a friend. I love to do that, but I'm not going to click around and go to all the little special parts of the paper that I enjoy. No, I don't think I will.
Rita, thanks for your call. Stephen, is there just a generational change here? The affection for the pulp, even the ink on the fingertips.
Yeah, there may be. And look, I share that, and I hope that you know, most of these big city markets will figure out a way to keep some kind of version of print alive. But it should be said that, you know, once you get acclimated to reading on a screen and reading on some of these new devices like the iPhone or the Kindle, which were quite good reading devices, there are a lot of things about reading digitally that, you know, that are clear advantages over print. I mean, it is nice to be able to send an article instantly to a couple of friends or to comment on an article, to give feedback on it and to kind of sort the news in the way that you find most interesting. So it's not that print is in fact the perfect vehicle for conveying the news by any means.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about newspapers in big trouble, going down, not all, but some big ones, and maybe more to come this year, almost everyone is saying now, and whether a forest of bloggers, a new news ecosystem, will do the job that newspapers have done, maybe do more. Stephen Johnson gave a big speech in Austin, Texas last week at the Interactive Festival there. It's not only music they're making down in Austin. Got a lot of people's attention. He's talking about it with us today from New York. From Austin, Texas right now, David Carr joins us, media columnist for the New York Times. He's in Austin for the same festival. You can keep up with him at the New York Times Arts Beat blog. David Carr, thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys.
So a new news ecosystem. Are you ready for it?
Well, I'm participating in it in the sense that, you know, I'm blogging from South by Southwest. I covered the Oscars with a lot of video, a lot of commenters, and we are, you know, trying to re-engineer, you know, our product so that people can enter it in any number of ways. And whether 1,000 bloggers typing whatever come up with a version of the New York Times, you know, I have my doubts, but they can come up with something glorious and splendid and wonderful. People self-select into areas of, you know, passion and interest, and after a while they get pretty smart. There is, however, certain kinds of stories that require a level of not so much expertise, but just industriousness, where you have to, you're a former City Hall reporter, where you just have to keep banging and drilling and asking and until you get what you want. And I worry about those kind of really tough stories that we're going to end up just sort of annotating what is in plain sight and not dig out anything new.
Stephen Johnson, how about it? Does your vision of the new ecosystem really provide for that task? And not just that, I mean, the other kind of reporters, and I've been there too, is overseas. Who's going to be in Baghdad if it's bloggers that we're counting on, Stephen?
Well, I think David makes a great point, and I completely agree with it. The way I think it's going to happen is that there's going to be this kind of tiered system where you're going to have – let's take local as an example. You will have people who are just kind of involved neighbors who go to the school board meeting or find out something about the playground that's about to open up, who will post it just for the love of it. They won't have any financial reward, and they'll have, you know, certain integrity for being members of the community, but they won't have journalistic skills. But that'll be useful news in a certain way, and hopefully, you know, at Outside In, we can circulate that around a little bit more. Then there will be kind of professional independent bloggers, and we have a bunch of them in Brooklyn where I live, who've built up enough of a kind of a system that they can support themselves with online advertising. And they'll cover markets like music and real estate where there is advertising dollars. And they'll have more standards, and they'll have, you know, more time to go out and kind of report things and get involved. And then you'll still have people on the staff at the local paper that may be online only, who will do the longer stories that will require the kind of expertise and time and commitment that David is talking about. And it's the mix of all those things. Instead of relying on one of those things, we're going to be relying on kind of all three of those models at the same time. And that's what I think is going to lead to a better, more diverse and more local, in the case of local, a hyper-local combination of news.
David Carr, do you see all of that adding up to what democracy, the American democracy, needs? I mean, you say bloggers collectively will bring something good and glorious, but will it be enough, focused enough, attuned enough, coherent enough to keep a democracy on the rails? Or is that question kind of, you know, old-fashioned?
No, the question is not old-fashioned. I think it goes to the heart of sort of the fundamental civic issue. I live in New Jersey, and the Star-Ledger has historically done deep and really amazing local reporting in a state that is, let's face it, a game preserve of corruption, where there's bad stuff happening all the time. Well, the Star-Ledger went to their folks and said, you know, pretty much half of you have to take a buyout, or we're not going to be able to continue. And I, as a consumer of that paper, and I love that paper, am beginning to notice that they're not really holding up their end of the contract, that the kind of hyper-local reporting that Stephen talked about here and made a huge splash is not really being executed. And I have my arguments with whether ad-supported media, as Stephen suggests, is going to fund that over the long haul.
Clay Shirky is another thinker who's been talking, writing about this recently, said society doesn't need newspapers. What we need is journalism. What do you make of that formulation, David?
He's right in a sense. I had dinner with he and a bunch of his former students, and you know what? I can't say that I noticed a lot of interest in journalism here at South by Southwest, at both the Interactive Conference and now the Music Conference. I walk out of my hotel room door, and there's Wall Street Journal and USA Today laying there. Not one has been picked up all week, and those are both very fine papers. And it's because people are peering down into their iPhones as they walk up the hall. And what they're looking for is not the kind of news that Stephen and I are talking about. They are almost too busy making media, meaning communicating with their friends, Twittering, checking their social networks, to actually consume any media of the kind that we're talking about.
Talk about through the looking glass. What a turnaround. Let's get a call from Augusta, Georgia. Jim, you're on the air with David Carr and Stephen Johnson.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you.
My question is, with the decline in the newspapers, what does this do to investigative reporting? I mean, could we ever see a Watergate again? I mean, he's talking about there'll be an increase in blogs, but 90% of bloggers don't exactly have the access as most investigative reporters. I'll take my answer off the...
Yeah, Jim, it's a great question. Stephen Johnson, how about it? Woodward and Bernstein, will they come out of the ranks of bloggers?
Well, I think it's a bit like the answer that that we've given in a couple of different ways. I mean, let's look at one key fact here in terms of the decline of newspapers, right? In the last 20 years, since I was that college sophomore waiting outside the college bookstore in Providence for Macworld, right? The circulation of print newspapers has gone from 62 to 49 million. And in that period, their online presence has gone from 0 to 75 million. So in terms of like the relevance, not the business model, but the relevance of newspapers, print and or online – their vitality in the culture and in terms of their audience size, newspapers have never been bigger. And so
but they're going out of business. They're sucking wind. They may come back. God love them. But the trouble they're in.
Yeah, no, that's right. And again, but keep in mind, we are living in an extraordinary economic time. And hopefully it's not going to last for 5 years. And hopefully we're going to see the maturation of the online advertising market. And so I think that we will still have people coming to these kind of authoritative places, and they will still be able to, in many cases, fund investigative journalists and Baghdad bureaus. And they may not have food critics. They may not have book critics. They may not have movie reviews. They may not have sports kind of detailed coverage, because the web is doing that fantastically. We have more commentary, highbrow and lowbrow, about culture and media. And, it's great. We should still have David Carr at the New York Times, but we don't necessarily need, 10 people on staff doing those things at a lot of papers.
David Carr, do you share that confidence? There will be money for what most matters, for those investigative reporters, for the Baghdad Bureau. That it'll be there, David?
No, I don't share that confidence one little bit. I think Stephen's analysis on the whole is brilliant, but what he's talking about, you guys won't do food, you won't do movies, you'll just do the really hard, expensive stuff, and that will somehow be a better business. All that food, all that movie, all the criticism that we do, that's what pays the bills in our. That's what keeps the Baghdad Bureau open at however many million dollars a year it is. And to suggest that the problem that we're, Lynn Downey, I think this goes to Clay Shirky's point, what we're trying to preserve is newsrooms, not newspapers. And newsrooms are expensive apparatuses that do many things that, sort of an ecosystem of bloggers can't do. So we still need a model of either CPMs, ads on the web, that are going to support it, or some other revenue model, some tiered measure of service, money from the consumer, to make it keep going.
Let's get some citizen expertise right here. Susan from Boston. You're on the air, Susan.
Hi there.
Hi.
My concern is from the other side. I'm wondering about access. We still have a lot of people that aren't using the Internet for various reasons, and I'm wondering about that.
Very simple question. Stephen, the newspaper's not free, but neither is a computer. And the monthly access bill, what about the universality of access or something like it?
Well, I mean, if you look at the trends, computer Internet penetration is moving as rapidly through society as the television did in the 50s. So we are, computers are getting cheaper, access is getting cheaper. I think, in 5 or 10 years, you know, it really won't be all that different from talking about, you know, kind of phones and televisions. We expect that most people have them in their houses and are connected in one way or another. And I think that that's what we have to, you know, assume is coming our way.
So you're counting on diffusion, profusion. Williamsburg, Virginia. Tom, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Well.
We own a local daily online-only newspaper, and I'm the publisher of that. And one of the things that we looked at on day one was people keep asking journalists if journalism can survive without the newspaper. But the problem is they're not asking any business people. And what they're not realizing is that the newspaper's demise started well before this, when a lot of the content that provided the rights for advertising is just not relevant or important anymore, like stock market reports. So what we did was, I own two radio stations here, and I've been in the radio industry for well over 20 years. And we took another ailing thing, being the radio industry, and said, the key is to drive people to the web, because if you read a book on the Kindle, you still read a book. If you read the newspaper on a computer screen, you still read the newspaper. We've been profitable since the day we started. We hire only professional newspaper journalists that work for us. My managing editor is a 25-year veteran of the newspaper industry, but she was able to take herself away from this whole concept. You have to have a piece of print in your hand in order to be a journalist.
Tom, your line is rough, but we've got the picture, and we appreciate your call, and I thank you for it. David Carr, there's Tom. He's got two radio stations, and he's publishing purely online out of Williamsburg, Virginia. Could the New York Times let go of its paper product and still succeed?
Well, that whole truck and printing press business, I think we can all agree, is a pretty rough business to be in. But even if you look at, let's take Minnesota, where Joel Kramer, I think, has done a wonderful job with MinnPost.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Kramer will be the first person to tell you, we can't do it all. We don't have the resources. Even with a lot of linking, even with a lot of citizen participation, and he's got a really crackerjack staff, that they can't do what newsrooms have historically done in cities, which is to cover their places comprehensively.
Let's hear from Nashville, Tennessee, on exactly this point. Charles, you're on the air.
Yes. I find the problems here with the Tennessean is, they cut down the size of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
It looks awful. Everybody I know hates it. There's very little content. Absolutely zero investigative. The TV stations locally do all of that now.
Mm.
I think people want to see that. In fact, the paper did a poll here, and that was one of the top one or two things that people wanted to see. Also, the classifieds are practically useless anymore. I had a rental house for rent, spent several hundred dollars buying ads in the paper, got very few responses, listed with a free service, and rented the house.
And so is the web picking up the slack for you on one or both sides, Charles, or not?
I only use the web to look at particular articles that have come to my attention or something, or when I have missed them. And I want to point out that in our area, there are still a lot of people not on the web.
Yeah.
This is missed, I think. But the paper, on the editorial page, for example, is boring as it can be. They have a group of five or six citizens who, I guess, are supposed to represent us all. And so they write letters to the editors for months. I mean, they just call them these same people. I don't even look at them anymore.
So headline, dissatisfied in Nashville. There are time is short. Let me get one more. Mike, thank you, Charles. Mike in Tupper Lake, New York. You're on the air.
How you doing, Tom?
We're well. What do you see, Mike?
What do I see? Well, on the topic of blogging, which is all great and fine and everything, but I don't think people are very objective some of the time. So I think there's a conflict of interest there, in part.
Because there's so much opinion when it comes to blogging. Our time is very short, Mike. Thanks. Stephen Johnson, how about it? I mean, does it, you know, Nick Kristoff is saying today it's just 1,000 opinions. Everybody will pick their own, get in their own little attitude ghetto, and we lose the commons and maybe the objectivity of the newspaper, Stephen.
Well, there are two sides to that. The first is, of course, the web makes it's vastly easier to find yourself to a completely different, contrary opinion to your own than it ever was before.
And easier to ignore the contrary opinion. And,
yeah, but they're all one link away, right? If you used to just subscribe to The Nation, it was very hard to get to, you know, the American Spectator or something like that. And it's a lot easier to find those things. But again, this is what the big newspaper sites should be doing. They should be saying, listen, it is part of our civic duty to make sure that people see both sides of the spectrum. And so we're going to grab the best of both sides of the political spectrum and promote it on our site and put it on our site and fill our pages with all that great content that's circulating around there.
David Carr, what's your attitude finally? Is it sort of Betty Barr the door here? You've talked about newspapers trying urgently to charge online for what they do, or let it go and let Stephen Johnson's kind of vision of the future, you know, let it come on.
Well, I share the caller's concern that people will self-assign into verticals, and your concern that we'll lose this common that we have where ideas are actually explained rather than reinforced. I do think that at some point the forest will burn down and there'll be trees sitting there. I expect that there'll be consumer participation and that there will be, I mean, newspapers are necessary. People look at them. That's how we harvest money. It's not just a vehicle. It's where the money is. That's why we stay in that business. The problem is in this perilous space between that business and flipping a switch on this other business, which has been great for us. We have 20 million uniques, people tuning in every which way, but it's kind of a dollars to dimes proposition.
The money's gone for now. David Carr with the New York Times, thank you so much for being with us. And Stephen Johnson, great speech, great essay. Thanks for sharing it with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.